now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Matt from the Future Europe podcast. Have you ever wondered what the future will be like? How will you drive in the future? How will you eat, learn, keep yourself warm? Will the future be more social? How are they going to look after you when you're old? And maybe, who are they? The answers are all on Future Europe. Subscribe to Future Europe and get the future now.
Future Europe. Framtidens Europa.
Europa Futura.
Europa a jövőben.
Budúcnosť Európy.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gabriel Marcotti. We thank you for joining us on this fine Thursday morning. Now, with us in the studio, I'm especially excited because Alan Smith is here. And down the line, gets even better. The man who has been to both Champions League semi-finals this week. And if there's anybody who could be at both Arsenal in Valencia and Chelsea in West London, he probably would be. It's Henry Winter.
Later on, we'll be looking ahead to the final day of the Premier League season. And by the way, I know we've been bowled over by the excitement of the last 48 hours, but that's pretty darn exciting, too, Natalie. With it's one of those weeks where, like, I don't know if they'll be flying the Premier League trophy by helicopter back and forth, because, you know, they don't know if they'll be handing it out in Brighton or at Anfield.
Indeed, it might be just hovering in the Midlands for a long, long time. Who knows? But let's start with one of the most amazing midweeks we've ever seen in football. The two Champions League semi-finals delivered 9 goals, two of the most incredible comebacks in the history of the competition, and an all-English final as a result. Let's start then in Amsterdam with a game that moved Maurizio Pochettino to tears. Tottenham were 2-0 down and 3-0 down on aggregate at half-time, but a Lucas Moura hat-trick, the last goal coming deep into stoppage time, took Spurs to their first Champions League final on away goals. Henry, have you ever known back-to-back nights of footballing drama that we've witnessed?
I mean, I think involving English clubs in Europe, so I think it's got to be right up there. I mean, it was just fantastic. I mean, what it sort of boils down to is you can talk about tactics, you can talk about philosophies, and I keep on reading all over the place about sort of Moneyball and all this. But what those two nights were down to was just desire on the parts of coaches. I know they made tactical changes, both them, Klopp and Pochettino, particularly Pochettino last night with Llorente. But it was just hunger there. And it was quite interesting just seeing the footage of Lucas Moura being shown the Brazilian commentary to his goal last night that took Tottenham to the final. And he was just incredibly emotional. He had tears in his eyes. And that was the overriding emotion. It was all about emotion. And that's what drove them through, along with a little bit of naivety from some of these brilliant young Ajax players.
Henry, I think you make a great point about desire. To me, the situations were a little bit different in the sense that with Liverpool, you know, you had to some degree, get them to believe that what was statistically extremely improbable could actually happen. With Spurs, it is about desire, but ultimately they knew that, you know, if they won 1-0, they'd take it into extra time and whatever. In some ways, it was an easier sell, at least at the start of the game. And what struck me was, in that first half, even though Spurs came out of it 2-0 down, and then at that point they might have felt that they would have had a real mountain to climb, and they did. Maybe also in the first half, they looked at it and said, you know what, we're 2 goals down, but we really don't deserve to be, because we actually played pretty darn well in this first 45 minutes.
Well, Tottenham didn't play well in the first half last night.
You don't think so?
Really poor. No. I mean, I thought I was really disappointed with them. I mean, you know, Trippier made mistakes, and you know, Trippier was poor, as he has been for a lot this season in the first half. But he actually looked like the World Cup and the Real Madrid destroying attacking right back in the second half. Again, you know, your point about desire, Harry Kane comes in the dressing room and has a go at them. Pochettino makes some rallying words. Okay, tactical tweaks, Llorente, we're going for it, and just driving through. And you know, so absolutely, look, I mean, there's rightly so much analysis of the game now, and we have so many sort of bright people coming out of university and studying things and working out XGs and all that. It is just simply about hunger. And that is exactly what's been shown in the last two nights. You could take it back to the Premier League on Monday night with Vincent Kompany. I mean, that is, you know, we can't overcomplicate this sport too much, Gav.
Sometimes it
is about heart.
Are you saying that Spurs were hungrier than Ajax?
I think in the second half, absolutely. I think that showed. I think you had some players there with Ajax connections who might be a little bit embarrassed by what had happened in the first half. I think you had maybe some people in their careers, things that had happened to them, rejections that had happened to them. Lucas Moura with PSG. I think maybe they looked to themselves, looked at you know, the friends and family they had in the crowd. They were reminded of what the shirt means. And absolutely, tactics played a part. But those two wins for Liverpool and Tottenham Hotspur were rooted in desire.
I mean, I think it's an interesting point. I wonder, you know, obviously, there were so many chances. I think Spurs hit the woodwork twice, if I'm not mistaken, including early on with Son. Ajax did as well. There was the Vertonghen header as well. I wonder, Alan, would there be a different narrative? Because it seems to me like there were so many chances at the end. Everybody was ready to say, or what I think would have been ready to say, look, there it goes, Spursy again. You know, imagine if Ajax had buried that chance at the end, and then you dial it back to the Vertonghen header on the line. I don't know. This is what makes me uncomfortable about saying that when they win, it's because they wanted it more. Because then, by implication, the other times that we've seen Spurs falter, that they wanted it less those times. Well, what's your take, Alan?
Spursy as a concept is pretty much finished, and probably has been finished. Yeah. Sort of before that, even you'd think maybe even back to the Dortmund game, certainly the two legs against City, that is an idea, you know, unless you're an Arsenal fan, I think nobody is going to, you know, is going to mention that anymore. It's, you know, it's something that Arsenal
we'll never hear anybody talk about St. Totteringham's Day again.
I mean, unless you're an Arsenal fan, like trolling people, you know, any right-minded person who's interested in football has to look at this and think, you know, the Spurs of the past, you know, it's a thing of the past. Pochettino has completely changed it. Looking at Ajax, I did feel that, you know, for the first time, the sort of lack of experience told. You could see that, you know, obviously Spurs showed how much they wanted it, etc. But I think Ajax kind of, once the first goal went in, seemed shell-shocked. Yeah, they still created chances, and, you know, Ziyech went close two different occasions at the post once, and there was that other one which went narrowly wide, and, you know, a yard left or right, and that would have been a very, very different story. But I did feel that towards the latter stages, Ajax kind of stopped playing their way, and they'd made so much throughout this campaign against Juventus, against Real Madrid, that, you know, this is how we play, we stick to it, we're going to attack.
Sorry, just to add to that, because I agree that they stopped playing the way we think they play,
yeah.
But that was also, they're in the lead, and then he started making what you might call defensive substitutions. Yeah. He takes off Dolberg, who's, you know, big, tall center forward, brings on Sinkgraven, a midfielder. Then he took off Lasse Schöne, a midfielder, for Veltman, who's a defender. So you are kind of seeing that. Mm. So you could say he was trying to make them more defensive, perhaps abandoning the game plan. But it's weird because that's kind of you would think that's kind of the more mature thing to do, rather than just keep attacking.
Yeah, but even before, I don't know, had an interview with Tagliafico, which was on the Times website on Tuesday, and he'd made the point in the interview that Ajax would stick to the game plan and they would attack because they know that's their most effective approach. And because of those substitutions, and, you know, we can't really say sitting here if mentality, how much of a role, from Ajax's point of view, mentality played, but you could sense, even just watching on TV, that they had sort of departed from their own style, and I think I do feel that.
And that was a mistake.
Yeah, I do feel so. I mean, like,
Henny, I agree with what Alan's saying, but I also wonder. It is a bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, in the sense that if I'm playing Spurs and all of a sudden he takes off. Was it Llorente came on for Wanyama, right?
Yep.
He takes off a defensive midfielder. He brings on a striker. He takes off a fullback. He sends on Lamela. I'm kind of an idiot if I then don't counter that by bringing in more defensive players who can help out, because Spurs just have so many attacking players at that point and are gambling, right? I mean, do you put this on Ten Hag or Ajax changing the way they played, or is it more about Spurs?
Well, a little bit. I mean, there was a sort of a naivety to Ajax, but I completely agree with Alan. This whole sort of Spursy thing, that disappeared when Pochettino came in. I think he reminded them of their... Oh, look, he organised them. We can see that, the tactical element. But you just only have to watch him, and also with Jurgen Klopp as well. They're both very tactile individuals. I mean, I've not interviewed Poch one-on-one, but if you interview Klopp one-on-one, it's quite an engaged experience. I'm sure you've talked to him. There's a sort of visceral element to these two men. They're not as cold and calculating as the sort of, you know, the latter stages of Mourinho's career. He was a far more sort of, again, a sort of tactile creature early on, and brilliant at man management earlier in his career, but certainly in his first incarnation at Chelsea. And again, that just comes back. You listen to the players, you talk to the players, and you can see how they are around Klopp. So coming back to our sort of, was it science or was it the heart? Those two nights were purely down to two groups of individuals just looking within and fighting for it.
But Henry, it's funny. I know you put Klopp and Pochettino together, and I think it really applies. But I spoke to somebody at Liverpool who said ultimately what you want for a manager is a guy who comes up with a good footballing idea, who knows how to relate that idea and get it across to the players and get the players to buy into it, and who represents you well to the outside world, because he is the face of your club and you want it to be on brand and on message. And I think Klopp ticks those three boxes probably better than any manager at any club in the world.
I mean, I think you'd have to throw Pep Guardiola in there in terms of how he represents the club and the emotional attachment that supporters and particularly the players have for him.
I would agree with you there. The only thing I would say is Pep Guardiola is so strongly identified globally with a different identity relative to Manchester City. You know, because when he wears his yellow ribbon, and obviously he has everything that went before at Barcelona, obviously Klopp was at Dortmund before, but I don't know. It just strikes me that Klopp feels more connected.
But don't you think they're both very good fits for their clubs? Because a club like Liverpool needs a demonstrative, expressive community champion in a way, which Klopp clearly is very demonstrative.
Well, talking of Jurgen Klopp, shall we discuss?
I have one more. Sorry, it's very quick. It's a very quick poll question, but I think this is something that we're going to have to face. I mean, we all saw Harry Kane running onto the pitch at the end. I'm assuming if he's running like that, he's going to be fit for the final. Now, here's the question. I don't think there's any way that Harry Kane, Hongmin Son, and Lucas Moura all start the final. That is one hell of a selection headache, Henry. And Alan and Natalie, feel free to weigh in as well, because if Kane is fit, you assume he starts. Obviously, Son not only gives you something different, but he's been so important this season. And then you have the guy who scored the hat trick to get you there. What do you think he's going to do, Henry?
Well, are you saying it's between dropping Christian Eriksen and Dele Alli?
Oh, you now, think he dropped one of those two rather than drop one of those three?
But this is the debate. This is the road that you were sort of heading us down.
Well, I know. I'm assuming those two guys start, right? You have to start Eriksen and Alli, and if you get Winks back, great, maybe.
You know, the strange thing is, Ali, in keeping with probably 21 of the 23 England World Cup players, has not actually had a great season. Fantastic pass last night, and he certainly improved in the second half. Eriksen continually being linked with, you know, major club is a fantastic talent. I agree with you. I think Son plays. I mean, it would be a huge call if Lucas Moura didn't start. But, I mean, he's normal front four. Is Kane, supported by Son, Eriksen and Ali. unless he is super brave, drops Ericsson slightly deeper or Ali slightly deeper, and leaves out a holding midfielder, which I'm not sure he will do, no. Given what that midfield battle is going to be like in Madrid.
Certainly would be a big call there to drop Lucas Moura, as you say, to have got them to the final. But the way Tottenham are, they all seem so understanding. They're such a unified team that any decision that's made, they'll take it on board. Right, let's move on to the small matter of Liverpool overcoming a 3-0 deficit, beating Barcelona 4-0 to reach their ninth European Cup final. Something we thought couldn't be topped, of course. Now, Henry, you've been to the biggest games, the biggest stadiums. How does Tuesday night at Anfield rank in terms of your experiences in football?
I still think Istanbul was better because of the prize that was there on the day. And it was extraordinary. I mean, people have been slightly patronising towards that Milan team and saying, oh, you know, what Liverpool did on Tuesday night was even more impressive because of quality, because Messi was on the pitch. But, you know, you look at some of those Barcelona players, and that is a team that needs a little bit more pace and a little bit more youth. I think it was their oldest team ever in Europe. It was their average age of 29 years and 122 days. You then compare it to that Milan team that Gerrard and Smits and all those players overcame. That was a good team. So I would still put that one up at the top. But in terms of a great European night, I wasn't around at Saint Etienne, but I've seen most of the big ones since, and in 77, and it was phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, it was just, well, it was a privilege to be there. And fair play to the Barcelona fans at the end. Everyone said it was brilliant, they stayed on. Well, actually, one of the reasons why they stayed on is they couldn't get out because they held back for half an hour, 20 minutes after the match. But it was fantastic. You know, they saw Trent Alexander going past, they saluted him, they saluted the Barcelona. The Liverpool players and supporters. So they came out of it with a lot of credit, Suarez less so.
I mean, it wasn't impossible. I would have considered the longest of long shots. But, you know, there is always a chance. And I think as well, because the first leg had been so even, and you sort of think about Liverpool and how defensively they've been quite good for, you know, the majority of games throughout this campaign, where Barcelona's sort of confidence that they would go to Anfield and score seemed ridiculous, because, you know, sure, they've scored three times in the home leg, should have been four. We should also mention that Dembele chance that he had in the final couple of seconds of the Nou Camp, where, you know, Messi was visibly really annoyed and people were like, oh, why is he so annoyed? It's 3-0, it'll be fine. If, you know, Dembele finished that chance, you probably would have then said it was impossible for Liverpool to come back. You know, there is always a chance. And I think as well, people make so much of this, you know, the cliche of turning up to Anfield and the atmosphere, etc. And sometimes it is, I think, a little bit overblown. But you could really see on Tuesday night that, you know, you could expect it beforehand, even at 3-0, that Liverpool would, you know, the atmosphere would be really good. Liverpool would attack Barcelona, really get into them from the very start. And sort of, I would have expected Barcelona to kind of, you know, come in, try and kill the game slightly, take the pace out of it, and sort of, after those opening 10-15 minutes, you know, settle it down, take the sting out of Liverpool. But it just didn't happen. They just didn't really, I think complacency was obviously an issue. They just didn't perform. There were so many of those players who played so far below their ability. You look at Jordi Alba, you look at Ter Stegen, who, you know, people speak of him being the best goalkeeper in the world, and it's incredibly poor. You know, you kind of look and you think, that's not really the level you would expect from them. I think Alba seemed to have a bit of a nightmare as well. Yep. And there were just so many of them who did not perform to their level, which isn't to, you know, detract from Liverpool at all, because of it, you know, it was an amazing performance. But going back to, say, United PSG, when people were raving about United's comeback there, you can't help but think it's, you know, the losing side's complacency and sort of, you know, failure to keep their heads is the defining factor there.
Well, and a last minute VAR penalty for handball.
Yeah, but you know, the wider issue there was PSG's lack of, anyway, we're not going to go back to March.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. Every Thursday at thetimes.co.uk, our very own Bill Edgar provides 11 trivia teasers for you. Here is one for you on this podcast.
But you have to read it, and Natalie's now going to read it in Bill Edgar's voice.
I'm not sure that I can. Wolves will finish 11 places higher than the next best of the newly promoted clubs this season in the Premier League. We already know Wolves will be 7th, Cardiff 18th and Fulham 19th. That 11 place gap is the largest since 1994-95, when which team finished 16 places higher than the next best newly promoted team? Oh, this is going back a while.
Yes, and I'd like Alan to answer this one because...
He's thinking.
I'm trying to think of the teams that were promoted the previous season.
It's hard.
Think that Leicester go up, ooh, and then go back down. Forest.
I think Forest is quite a good shout. I would say.
Yeah.
We should have said no Googling or any other internet searches for this one because people need to think about it.
What a sado you would be if you're like, oh, I'm just going to look up the answer on Google because we can't be arsed to wait around.
But people do. What you need to do is have a think and then stick around to the end of the podcast to find out the answer.
I'm Piers Linney. Join me for Rethinking Business, a new podcast series brought to you by NatWest. Let's face it, the path to business success is rarely straightforward. That's why in this series, we're hearing from businesses who are thinking differently. This week, I'm joined by Alex Levin, founder of NetWorld Sports.
I always thought the only products I want to sell are the products with our name on, and the only place they'll be able to get them is us.
That's Rethinking Business by NatWest. Subscribe now.
If Sunday can deliver anything like the drama we've seen this week, we are in for an incredible conclusion to the Premier League season. The title race will conclude on Sunday, the last day of the season, with either Manchester City or Liverpool lifting the Premier League trophy. City lead by a point. They travel to Brighton. Liverpool host Wolves. Now, Monday's victory over Leicester was Manchester City's 13th in a row. But did they look a bit like they were running out of ideas, Henry?
I just think they've worked out how to find a way. I mean, obviously, the narrative was, oh, you know, do we want a centre-half shooting from there? And the other players and, you know, Bernardo and Raheem Sterling were saying, oh, you know, get it wide, get it wide. And yet he goes and scores like that. Maybe that's the ultimate team performance, the ultimate team when individuals all over are contributing and when they needed it most. I think this has been, I read somewhere a couple of weeks ago that this has been not a very good title race because neither team have slipped up. It's just been fantastic. I mean, just the two of them going head to head, the quality is just been, you know, and the quality from front to back, the quality of the football. I mean, we are really being, you know, treated. The focus obviously is going to be on the Champions League, but the Premier League has been great. And just one thing, you mentioned the trophies earlier. I mean, the fake trophy, in inverted commas, the replica, will be at Anfield. The real one will be at Brighton. So that's where the Premier League thing is going, purely on the basis of its two draws or whatever, City will get it. I do prefer it when there was a helicopter stationed at East Midlands Airport and it could adapt between the two. You know, with Richard Scudamore dressed up as Biggles or flying it from one end of the country to the other.
I'm shocked, Henry, that you didn't find last year's title race more intoxicating than this one. You know, I would have thought a 19-point lead would be, and a title wrapped up in February would be more interesting. I want to hear Alan on this, too, because this is a question that comes directly from our boss, who specifically said, I want to know what Henry thinks about this, and Alan, too, and you too, Gab, and Natalie. John Stones. So it looked at this, John Stones, Laporte, right foot, left foot, that's the future. Obviously, Vincent Kompany's played the last few games and really well. But there were a period before that when Otamendi was getting picked in front of him. Do you have any insight, Henry, on, you know, is it just a natural post-World Cup dip? Has he had injuries? Is there something else going on? Any theories?
I mean, John Stones is a fantastic footballer. We've seen that. And your point about him being a good blend with Laporte is completely right. So, yeah, it is slightly surprising he's not playing. I think there's individual leadership things in terms of Guardiola needed company at this stage of the season. But company, because of his body, he can't play too many consecutive games. So I think with John Stones, I don't think anyone who knows his character knows how focused he is and how driven he is. And I think he will see this as, you know, he's been through some difficult patches before with sort of injuries. I think he'll just see whatever's going on in his life, he will, you know, his football life, whatever, he will just see this as an opportunity that he will seize his chance, because he's such a professional, he's such a good player, you know, he's such an important player for England, as I'm sure we'll see in the Nations League. So, look, he'll come good again, but maybe Guardiola just needs the leadership of company there at the moment.
Alan, what's your take? Because obviously we all know how important company's leadership is, but through this recent successful spell of Guardiola, often he's been sort of, you know, like those Davis Cup captains where he's the non-playing captain, and because he's had injuries or whatever. He's also, well, we all love the goal, and I think those of us who met him, you know, he's one of the real good guys. The reality is he's also had some iffy moments as well because of his injuries and his body and whatever. What's your take? Because you can see company in certain situations, but like I said, Otamendi was well ahead of Stones earlier too.
I think if you look at previous seasons, company has sort of shown this leadership and, you know, ability to kind of drag City through like big games towards the end of seasons. He scored big goals in past seasons and, you know, these sort of crucial late season games. I also think, am I right in thinking this is probably the longest spell company has gone in quite a long time in terms of fitness without an injury?
So you're adopting the company has been good and important line rather than there's something about John?
Yeah, I think company being, because of his experience and his, you know, obviously this player who's been at City before the transformation, and I feel like Guardiola, aware of that, is leaning towards that direction. I'm sure, you know, who knows, there may have been an issue with Stones, we can't really say. And I think, you know, Henry's point about Stones and a lot of the England players having a dip is quite right, whereas company, who's had the, you know, this horrendous run of injuries, is suddenly, you know, fit, seems capable of lasting through successive games. And, you know, there have been a couple of, you're right, there have been a couple of shaky moments. If you think of the game at Old Trafford a couple of weeks back, initially you could have been sent off. Yeah, and you feared for him because he just didn't have the pace to keep up with Rashford. But as that game progressed and we kind of saw that, you know, United, etc., faded, but since then I feel like he has been.
It's just weird, he just has a very different skill set from Stones as well. Henry, if City win it, again, all they have to do is better Liverpool's result. It's going to be their fourth league title in 8 years with three different managers. Is there a broader message there, not just about the money, but about the way the club is run?
I think it's a well-run club. I mean, it helps that they've got vast fortunes to call on, but you know, there's one thing, having money available, and the next thing is spending it properly. And they've spent it properly on expertise in individuals like Begiristan and creating the structure behind the scenes. But look, you've been to the training ground, the campus there. I mean, CFA. I mean, it's fantastic what they've built there. And it's one of the greatest training grounds probably of all sports in the world. So, absolutely, I like the fact that they've transformed an area of East Manchester which needed it. So yeah, money's a key thing, but it's been money well spent. You know, they've got intelligent people working behind the scenes, Brian Maher, Siksi Begiristan. So, I think there is, in terms of for other clubs who don't necessarily have their resources, I think maybe they look at some of their buys and think, actually, they're not necessarily buying superstars, but they're buying players who will be superstars in sort of 3-4 years. But they also, importantly, they buy good characters. You can see that they've got that room there where people go into and they brainstorm what an individual's like, and they get all these reports in on what the individual's like as a person as well as a player. They make all the calls to make sure they've got, you know, the right characters. Bernardo Silva, when he came in, obviously he was well known, highly praised, but I don't think people necessarily thought what a great individual he is. He's so popular around the club. as well as what a fantastic footballer he is as well. So it's a well-run club, but of course it helps when you've got that sort of money.
I think Henry makes a really good point, because I was just thinking about this, and this is all in relative terms, but when you think about who came to Manchester City as established, you know, superstars of the, you know, Paul Pogba type level, or Angel Di Maria. And I'd argue that, I mean, I'm forgetting something, so help me here, Henry, but you could make a case for Aguero, obviously, but that was, what, like 7 years ago, something stupid like that? Everybody else, mm-hmm. you know, you got guys like Kyle Walker, whatever, you know, how much of a superstar is a right back going to be from Spurs? And he's English. No, I'm just kidding. But but I think that's just a lot. Like, Kyle Walker, is he still their most expensive player, or close to it? You're getting guys like that. They haven't been in a position where they've gone out and they've bought one of the top 10 players in the world and then said, okay, now how do I integrate this guy into the squad? It seems to me that everybody that they've added, and they've obviously spent a ton of money and brought really good players, were all people who had to fit into the system, and who they believe could fit into the system pretty naturally. And many of these guys have improved since they've been there, which I think is it's a bit unusual from the way most clubs operate.
But the superstar there is the coach. You've got some of the Pep Guardiola's fame. I know he's got a very raw personality, and he's very sort of emotionally demonstrative and caught up in it. And you often worry about his health when you see him bouncing around the dugout on match days. But he is the superstar there. And I think everything sort of fits in around him. But the structure that you talk about is absolutely key. Bagheeristan going in there early, sorting everything out, getting the philosophy almost in place, certainly structurally, before you then have this football genius who comes into the dugout. It does annoy me, and again, not being so snappy about some of the pieces I've read, but sometimes people are a little bit patronising towards Guardiola and say, well, he's only done it with money, he's only done it with Messi. He didn't have Messi at Bayern Munich. Okay, he hasn't won the Champions League, didn't win the Champions League there, and he hasn't so far at Manchester City. But he is one of the greatest coaches we've ever seen in this country. And I keep talking to the FA and say, you know, can you get him in to do a coaching course for the young coaches in this country? Because he is, again, coming back to what an amazing title race it is. He's changed the landscape. He's, you know, fullbacks are not fullbacks anymore. You know, they're dropping into midfield, and they're, you know, inverted fullbacks, whatever. They're just, you know, they're changing the game. He's changed the way that we've looked at football in this country. He's the most important manager we've had, along with Ferguson, in the last 30 years. And I would include Wenger in that bracket. Because he's opened the eyes. You've only got to talk to Raheem Sterling or watch Raheem Sterling, see how he has made Raheem Sterling better. He improves people. But because he's got this superstar quality, I mean, Gab, you know him far better than I do. But when you're in, even in just in a press conference with Guardiola, he absolutely radiates star qualities. So maybe they don't need the players individually to do that.
On Liverpool, should we just discuss them a little bit? They are faced with the possibility of losing just one game all season, ending the season on 97 points and not winning the league. Alan, does reaching the Champions League final make it easier then to accept that they might not be lifting the trophy on Sunday? Does it sort of take the pressure off them a little?
Pressure is strange, because if you think of like the running and, you know, the history, the record since really that game at Goodison when they drew, you know, the pressure seemed to kind of be ramped up then, because people were saying, oh, look, they're bottling it, etc. And, you know, they've dealt with that, and they've dealt with even, you know, Barcelona. So I don't think pressure really is something that seems to affect them in the sort of, in the sense that you would think initially. Whether the Champions League final will make it easier to accept, I mean, initially it's hard to say, because, you know, say if City go to Brighton, win, Liverpool, doesn't matter the result of it, against Wolves, but, you know, they probably won't be as deflated immediately, because they'll be aware that, you know, June 1st we're going to Madrid, we're going to play Spurs. But I think when it settles down at the end of the season, it might be, you know, end of July, whatever, you know, they'll wake up and kind of realise that, well, we were really, really close here. And I was kind of laughing. There's a clip doing the rounds of a Liverpool fan who'd phoned, I think it was into TalkSport, saying that we deserve a trophy even if we finish second, because we've earned so many points. And, you know, it is, in many ways, it would be really, really cruel if they, you know, go through the season losing one game and end up finishing second. But ultimately, you have to accept that, you know, if City go and do the job that they've been beaten by, you know, one of the best club sides we've probably ever seen. Which is, you know, it's harsh and the timing of it is cruel, but, you know, that's just football, isn't it?
But this is the Pochettino's point for which some people ridicule
about trophies. Yeah.
Trophies are for egos.
Yeah.
If you go and you do a good job, you've done a good job with the resources you have. And that applies to Pochettino. That applies to people further down the tables. That applies to Nuno, if you like. That applies to, you know, Chris Hughton, if he keeps him up. That applies to Eddie Howe. That applies to whoever you want to mention. I'm sure I'm leaving people out. That applies to your friend, was it Gene Wilder? Chris Wilder, right? That we've established. Yeah, no, but this is what it is, right? If you do a good enough job that you go beyond your resources and your fans are happy and you're happy and you're moving in the right direction, that's your trophy. You know, the fact that you can stink it up and then you win because you get luckier because the other team screwed up worse than you, yeah, that's great. That's random. That's the randomness of football. Yeah.
Why then did Maurizio Pochettino hint, and he might have been joking, that if Tottenham win the Champions League, he would leave if there's not a project in mind?
I think what he was just trying to do was just make the point for the here and now around the 90 minutes of that game that if they manage to, you know, overturn this deficit and beat this fantastic Ajax team and get to the that is an amazing achievement in itself. And then there was a sort of slight throwing up of hands. Well, you know, what more can I achieve? I might as well go off home. But that bit was very much in an inverted commas. I don't think if he wins the Champions League that he is going to walk away.
No, let me give you a scenario on the back of that. And this also comes from our boss, so let's all weigh our words carefully. What happens if they win the Champions League and then Daniel Levy goes to him and you see, Mauricio, we won the Champions League. We're only the second London club ever to win the Champions League. We finished third in the Premier League. I didn't buy a single player in last summer. In fact, I even sold Nkudu and we tried to get rid of Janssen, but he manages to linger around. You know, we don't need money. We don't need investment. We're going to buy one or two guys. Maybe, you know, you want me to chuck in some money to extend Eriksen or Alderweireld, fine. But this is evidence that we really should be hoarding the money and paying down the debt on the stadium rather than going and spending more. What do you do if Levy goes and tells you that?
I don't think Levy will. I know this is this perception of Levy. He's one of the most intelligent minds in football, particularly now that Scudamore's moved on. He has an amazing analytical mind. He understands that Spurs, as a fan and as a businessman, in a way, is the perfect combination to have someone in that position of power. He will appreciate the money that is being generated from being in the Champions League, from winning the Champions League, if they do then go on and do it. He will realise extra money flowing in, not simply from prize money, but from commercial arrangements. I think at some point the new Tottenham will be the super Uber Dome or whatever they're going to call it, and he'll be able to get more money for that if he can say, actually, listen, when you come in, you nice taxi people, when you come into the reception, you'll see a fantastic, great Champions League trophy there. So I think that so much money will be generated by Tottenham winning the Champions League, if they do, that he will be absolutely foolish not to give Pochettino our proverbial war chest, as we love to call it, whatever it is, 70, 80 million, just to sort of go out and strengthen that team with a Jack Grealish, with a Ryan Sessegnon. But as you say, as you alluded to, also giving those incremental rises to an Eriksen to make sure he stays, to a Kane, whoever is like, or Alderweireld. I mean, you know, Alderweireld has been their most consistent regular player in terms of minutes on the field this season. They clearly need to keep him. I'm sure the agents will be very busy and Levy will be very busy with them as well. But Levy is not foolish. He will understand the money generated and that, you know, the great Liverpool team, they always went out and bought another sort of superstar each year just to strengthen them. Tottenham aren't going to go and buy superstars and they'll want to give kids from the academy a chance, and Winks will come back to fitness and they've got all that. But they will definitely invest. I can understand all this, you know, the usual dance between the dugout and the boardroom over wanting more money, and Pochettino, I'm sure, is very sort of skilled at that. But I think he will get money.
Perfect. Thank you so much, yeah, Henry.
Thanks, Henry.
By the way, I kind of feel that like Daniel Levy's worked out that he could probably pay Harry Kane minimum wage and he would still show up and very happily be a part of it. That's the kind of guy he is. And great shout, by the way, calling it the Uber Dome, because given the transport sport links at the new White Hart Lane, yeah, I think they should have a big Uber car park with a bunch of Ubers waiting there, so that in Uber carpools and whatever, so people can get home, because I do find that place absurdly difficult to get to with public transport, at least from where I live. Alan, what strikes you most about this Premier League race?
Both clubs would possibly, well, Liverpool and City would rather win the other trophy that they're
most likely to win.
You know, that's not to say Liverpool are massive favourites against Spurs, right, in the final, but Liverpool
would,
because of the history and the
weight
to win a league title, I would say, if you're asking a Liverpool fan, you'd probably have a majority who would prefer to win the Premier League than Champions League, which, you know, they've won in the past 15 years. City, on the other hand, we've, you know, spoken for several seasons now about how the Champions League is the number one, and that's the one they really, really want. You know, again, not to belittle their, if they go and win the league, you know, I'm
they've
sure
also won it three times in the past 8 years, whereas
the Champions League, they've continuously fell a little bit short. So I do feel it's kind of amusing that, you know, there is a possibility that this time next month you'll have Liverpool celebrating sort of their second category trophy and City celebrating their second priority.
The train is now approaching Junction at platform.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host Luke Jones for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for our weekly predictions game, where we try and predict the scores in five featured matches this weekend.
Let's know the squeaky bum time. Brighton and Manchester City. This one's very simple. If Manchester City win, they become Premier League champions. Natalie, I'm going to go out and predict a 3-1 Manchester City win.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see anything but a City win. Brighton have been on a poor run of form. Obviously, they haven't won since March 9th, something like that. 8-game winless.
Yeah, but they drew with
Arsenal. I know they've had a couple of draws. Yes. But come on, City have to win to assure themselves of retaining the title. I'm actually going to go for a 3-0 win for City.
All right. Liverpool and Wolverhampton Wanderers. Again, very simple. For Liverpool to have a prayer, they need to... Well, they don't need to win this, because if City lose to Brighton, a draw will suffice. Will it? No, it won't. All right, who knows? Who cares? Anyway, ain't going to happen. Liverpool and Wolves.
I think Liverpool will win, but it won't matter because City will have won, so City will win the title. It's not easy to take on Wolves, we know that. Could the emotions of Tuesday take it out of Liverpool? Probably not. I think they'll be spurred on to try and get a win in front of the Anfield crowd. I'm going for a 3-1 Liverpool win.
I'm going to dial it down. I'm going to go Liverpool 2, Wolves 1.
Okay. At the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, they are hosting Everton in the final game of the season. What do you think for that one, Gab?
I'll tell you what I would love to see. I would love Everton to win like 6-0, Arsenal go and win 3-0, and then they have the goal swing, and then at the last minute, there's a Mesut Ozil own goal, which then turns the goal difference back into Spurs' favour. Just because that would be really entertaining. But
yeah,
it's not going to happen.
No.
If I'm Pochettino, you know what? I look at goal difference and I say, screw this.
I'm playing, you know, Skip and Skippy and those guys, and I'm going to go for an Everton win 2-1.
Ooh, interesting. So that would be three defeats at home for Tottenham. I'm going for a 1-1 draw.
Derby County against Leeds United. Lamps versus El Loco.
Spygate 2.
Wouldn't it be funny if, like, it's like Lampard sent, like, Ashley Cole to sneak around? Because you figure it's, like, the last thing in the world that Leeds United expect, right?
Yeah.
And Ashley Cole's very good at being invisible. Maybe Leeds... Maybe... Does he still have his facial hair? Because if not, maybe he could... Maybe he could dress like a little girl. Stand outside pretending that he's waiting for Patrick Bamford's autograph and spy on them.
Oh, dear. Anyway, what's going to happen in this? This is obviously the first leg of the Championship playoff semi-final. Derby coming into this in really good form, unbeaten in the last six. But they did lose both their regular Championship games to Leeds, conceding four at home back in August. Leeds are actually enduring their worst winless run this season in all competitions. They've not won in four.
That's because they let opponents score, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, true. I have a feeling as though they could turn this run around and take a positive result back to Elland Road. I'm going to go for a 2-1 Leeds win.
Ooh, I'm going to go 2-2 in this one, just because it's what I want to see. We got the old firm, Glasgow Rangers, against Celtic. Of course, it's Steven Gerrard's Rangers taking on a Celtic side that have won the title that I don't think we know yet if Neil Lennon is going to stick around as manager, and if Jose Mourinho is going to come in. That was a nice link. Okay, we're predicting goals here now. We're not predicting red cards.
No, just scores.
I'm going to go 1-0 to Rangers.
Are you? Interesting. Of course, there's been a lot of talk ahead of this one about a guard of honour and whether Rangers will give that to Celtic. I think reports are suggesting that's not going to happen. They've won their last five Rangers and conceded just once in that run, but Celtic haven't actually lost in the league at all this calendar year. Their last defeat, in fact, has to go back to December 29th, which was actually at Ibrox against Rangers. But I just think Celtic are on a high. 2-1 I'm going for. Just enough time to give you the answer to Bill Edgar's trivia teaser. We asked, Wolves will finish 11 places higher than the next best of the newly promoted clubs this season in the Premier League. We already know Wolves will be 7th, Cardiff 18th and Fulham 19th. That 11 place gap is the largest since 1994-95, when which team finished 16 places higher than the next best newly promoted team? And I think you've done quite well on this one.
You have, haven't you, Alan? Nottingham Forest, they came 3rd, Palace 19th, and Leicester City 21st.
Yeah, what a great season that was for Forest after they were promoted. OK, that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Henry Winter and Alan Smith.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet, which I emphasize again, is not a big piece of rock with the Ten Commandments written on it in lightning. It's just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information.
And we will be back on Monday when, Gab, we salute the Premier League champions.
Suspect we'll either be saluting City or Liverpool.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no,
I don't know, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.